The information that Danny Gillett had received was that a woman fitting Susan's description had broken the bank at Rocky Forte's invitation-only gambling club in Las Vegas. Forte, originally from Chicago, was a very rich professional gambler who was close to the Chicago mob, but apparently not one of them, although his place was probably financed by Jack Dragna. Given that Susan was no gambler, either she'd been very lucky or she'd worked a grift. Either way, Danny said, he was concerned she could soon become a permanent resident in the Las Vegas desert. Gillett was also keen on quizzing John Baldwin about him and June Allison stepping out, but Baldwin growled at him and he wisely decided to leave it at that. While all that was going on, I had paid a friendly sergeant to do some checking of my own on a quiet Saturday morning at the LAPD on Wilshire Boulevard. I checked Winslow's phone records and found that his home number had been called a number of times over the past few days from a payphone in Little Tokyo. It turned out to be across the street from the Jade Lounge, a known clubhouse for Jap gangsters known as the Yakuza. The act behaved themselves in L.A., and the lounge was more of a hotel for tattooed visitors from overseas. That said, relations with the authorities were tense after the forced relocations during the war. We arrived in Sin City on Saturday evening, just as dusk was setting on Las Vegas. Michael had booked rooms at the Golden Nugget on the southern end of the strip, and we picked up Eddie Bellows en route. Eddie had done some checking on Rocky Forte, whose real name was Darren Metz. His private gambling house, outside of Vegas, was a badly kept local secret. Officially, it was a place where Rocky invited his friends to stay, and they may or may not decide to have a friendly gamble. Unofficially, it was an off-the-books casino. Our plan was to go to Rocky Forte's with a picture of Susan and ask if anyone had seen her, but Rocky and his people were surrounded by goons. We needed an introduction. Michael decided to do the rounds of pimps and drug pushers known to him with a picture of Susan and some $20 bills. He struck out. Eddie hit the casinos and tried to get the lowdown on Rocky Forte's bad luck, but no one seemed to have heard that news, or at least, not yet. On Sunday morning, breakfast was a gloomy affair, with two pieces of bad news. First, I had called Mal to see what he knew about the Yakuza and the J Lounge, but he stopped me in my tracks with the news that June Allison had been found dead in her swimming pool on Saturday afternoon. It was suspected that she drowned after taking an overdose of sleeping pills. Knowing I'd been hanging around with John Baldwin and that he'd been seen having an altercation with June at the Wolf's party, he was keen to interview him. It was clear that the cops weren't buying the suicide angle and that John was now a murder suspect. I told Mal I hadn't seen John since Friday and that I had no idea where he was. Baldwin was many things, but I was sure he hadn't murdered June. John took the news badly and had to be restrained from wrecking the Nugget's breakfast buffet. The second piece of bad news came to Eddie from Johnny Stompanato. The Stafakis brothers were looking for him, on the hunt. Not that this was any surprise, although I was surprised that my name wasn't also on their list. Stomp did give Eddie a useful lead, a guy named Dexter Jones, who was Cohen's point man down in Vegas. Jones was a full-time gambler, but on Sunday morning he happened to be at home sleeping one off. Whilst I mixed up the patented Crane hangover cure, he and Eddie sat down to chat. Dex told us that Rocky Forte seemed to have lost his independence and was now fully in with Dragna, although whether he'd been given any choice in the matter was uncertain. Obviously that meant that Eddie would need to keep his head down, but Dexter promised to try and make an introduction on behalf of Michael Katzenbach. When we got back to the hotel, one of Michael's Vegas vice contacts, the entertainingly named Miss Fortune, had managed to find where Susan Wilton had been staying in Vegas, at the Hotel Apache on the north end of the strip. Susan had last been seen there 3 days earlier. We dropped in and spoke to the manager. He recognized Susan's picture and said that she was checked out in absentia by some Italian-American gentleman who fit the description of Bobby DeWitt and his crew. As we were talking, a car full of Asians arrived, and two of them strode into the lobby. Katz slipped away, and with the help of some more dead presidents, got her bags out of storage. Inside was a change of clothes and a business card stowed away behind a belt. It had a picture of dried roses and the name Les Fleurs d'Amour printed on it, with the name Pierce Paget on the reverse. Katzenbach thought he'd heard that name before, but couldn't immediately place it. He called Miss Fortune, who told him to forget both names, but she agreed to talk in a more private setting later that night. While Michael was getting information, Eddie met up with Dexter again, who had spoken to Rocky and secured a private invitation to Monday night's proceedings at Forte's Den. Dex also knew something about Paget. He was a pro gambler from Santa Barbara who came from big money. Dex said he was protected and knew very big people, people bigger than Mickey Cohen and Jack Dragna. Eddie mentioned Les Fleurs d'Amour, but Dex had just said it was another escort service in Las Vegas. Paget apparently liked the ladies a lot, and his service specialized in girls who looked like famous murder victims, with a catchy line, "Tonight, you could sleep with the dead." While Michael was busy getting information, Eddie met up with Dexter, who had spoken to Rocky and secured a private invitation from Michael to Monday night's proceedings at Forte's Den. Dex also knew something about Paget. He said he was a pro gambler from Santa Barbara who came from big money. Dex said he was protected and knew very big people, people bigger than Mickey Cohen and Jack Dragna. Eddie mentioned Les Fleurs d'Amour, but Dex said it was just another escort service. Paget apparently liked the ladies a lot, and his service specialized in girls who looked like famous murder victims, with the catchy line, "Tonight, you could sleep with the dead." On Monday morning, Michael got a call from his office, but it wasn't who he was expecting. It was the pinstripe man, who identified himself as being Preak. He said he was holding Katzenbach's secretaries, Izzy and Connie, hostage, and told Katz he had 2 days to deliver Susan, or else he would kill and eat them. He said that Professor Winslow was responsible for everything that had happened, and that his spirit was now in the statue. His daughter was inside Professor Winslow, and the spirit from the statue was currently occupying Susan Wilton. Katzenbach connected the dots, and this aligned with what Hans Schmidt had told us previously. Preak also told Katz that some of his Japanese friends were in Las Vegas, and that we should cooperate with them, or else. In the morning paper, there was a story about a gruesome discovery at the L.A. County Museum. The desiccated body of Hans Gruber, missile scientist at White Sands, who had been discovered in a crate in the reserve area of the museum. Around about noon, some Asians walked into the hotel lobby and asked for Michael. The leader gave his name as being Komi Narito. Katzenbach informed them that Susan was probably being held by Rocky Forte and Bobby DeWitt. Narito suggested that the group head to Rocky's home, not his club, and find out what he knew of Susan and her whereabouts.